Så brænding i tung og hitung og kanina, ligge uselu, og der går tog og lov om mig. Så brænding i tung og hinu, så mig er du, mig er rani, og du du, når lager mig. Så brænding i tung og nattering inden rammer, nu kan galla du inden langang inden mig.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves, brought to you by the Indigenous Collective out of CITR. We broadcast every week from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Autumn Chanel Vilji, I'm Treaty 11 Gwich'in and a Nuvi Alouette on my mother's side. I was born and raised on Treaty 6 territory, or Amasquatchi Waskayagin, of the Cree, Métis, Nakota Sioux, and Soto peoples. And I acknowledge that I'm an uninvited guest on unceded Coast Salish lands, and I'm very grateful to be here. I've been here for about 6 months now, and I'm grateful every day. Do you want to introduce yourself, Melissa?
Yeah. So I'm Melissa Habrill. I'm a settler here originally from Epiquette, also known as Prince Edward Island, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. And I'm also really excited to be here as an uninvited guest on Musqueam lands today and every day.
Beautiful, Ben. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I sure would. My name is Ben Chung. I'm Korean and Jewish and grew up on traditional unceded territory of the Shawnee people in the United States. I, too, am an uninvited guest on Musqueam territory, and I'm excited to be here at CITR.
Beautiful. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 10 of Unceded Airwaves. We have a pretty busy show for you all. We will be talking about the March on Vancouver event, previously known as the Women's March. We have an interview with Jody Ortega, who was one of the organizers and MC for the event. And then we'll be sharing speeches by Rhiannon Bennett. And finally, we will be having a little chat about this year versus last year. The music that you're going to be listening to today is entirely brought to you by Indigenous women, because events like these, we find it really important to highlight people who don't usually get airtime. And we will be including some explicit language later in the show, but we will have a content warning before that happens. We here at CITR find it important to talk about these things in their real form, so please be aware. But before we get into it, let's set our intention for the day. We are the Indigenous Radio Collective. Every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. We are a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
We strive to center Indigenous voices on our show and to build narratives that empower Indigenous people. Unceded Airwaves is our opportunity to share and define the diversity of Indigenous cultures and highlight some influential Native people.
If you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out. You can always reach us on our social media. We've got Facebook and Twitter. And if you have a voice for decolonization, then we want to hear from you.
Everyone is welcome and there's no experience necessary. Our weekly meeting is every Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. at CITR in the lower level of the Nest. And if you want to get involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways to participate in this collective.
You can also follow Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. If you're aware of a great Indigenous artist, send us a tweet using the hashtag Unceded Music or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we'll do our best to get it on air. And if we play a song you send us, we'll even give you a shout out.
We are also always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to. So let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show. We'll have our weekly unceded events listing to share a little later on in the show as well.
I see the line of all the broken hearts. Cycles.
The new Emily Carr University campus is hosting its first exhibition of 2018 on January 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. called Leaning Out of Windows, Step 1. The exhibition combines artworks made through artist-scientist collaborations and will include a panel discussion called The Translation Hub on January 27th from 2 to 5. The exhibition is up from January 26th to February 8th. Is Koko Hamamatsu talking about koi fish in a pond or the youth at CITR and Discorder? Get info on your wares, services, or events directly to students, musicians, artists, and all the coolest cats from Bellingham to Squamish by advertising with CITR and Discorder on air, in print, or online. This can be your reality if you email us at advertising@citr.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit CITR.ca for rates and packages.
The song you just heard was Red Dress by Chantel Krevizek. Now we have an interview with Jody Ortega. She was someone who organized the event. Before the interview, I will be reading Jody's bio. So here it is. Jody Ortega is a woman of color. Navigating the world through a trauma-informed lens, she has flipped the narrative of victimhood, surviving childhood sexual abuse, rape, and trafficking, and turned it into a powerful tool for disrupting and damaging social narrative and belief systems that contribute to rape culture and the culture of shame. She uses a distinctive brand of storytelling, characterized by rap and spoken word, and she has taken the performance to Victor Walk, Pecha Kucha, and two TEDx talks, as well as various educational and community settings. As a writer, Jody is a contributor to two anthologies, The Hero's Journey, Restoring Hope, Australia, and Trigger Points Anthology, Canada, USA. She was also a nominee in the 2016 Courage to Come Back Awards, Social Adversity category. Along with her work on March on Vancouver as a co-organizer of the Me Too rally and upcoming Next Step March, Jody is a member of SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests.
I am Jody Ortega. I am one of the co-organizers at March on Vancouver. We are putting together the January 20th, the Next Step March. I am also an advocate of survivors of sexual violence, having presented two TEDx talks, one in 2014 and one in 2017. I am also a member of SNAP, which stands for Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. It is a U.S. organization, but I am part of the Vancouver chapter.
That's lovely. So to what extent were you involved in planning last year's, to what extent were you involved in planning this year's event?
Mm-hmm. I'm one of the co-organizers, and I've been in connection with the remaining two organizers since the planning of the Me Too rally that was held last November 4, 2017.
Interesting. And then, So what did you do in planning this year's event, or organizing, should I say?
What was my focus?
Yeah.
My focus was I am working alongside a high school teacher and having her students participate in the march, because when I had the opportunity to speak at last year's march, you know, when you're looking out into a sea of 15,000 people, you know, what I noticed is that there were a lot of toddlers there, but there was not a lot of elementary and especially high school age students there.
Interesting.
So I wanted to, you know, and essentially the issues that we are fighting for, essentially is for, you know, future generations, and, you know, they learn by example. And so I do feel that it is important to, you know, include them and ask them, you know, to participate, you know, in the march. So I was able to connect with an educator who's amazing. And so hopefully we can get the students to come and bring along their signs that they're going to be making at school.
Oh, they're having a sign-making program at school? That's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
And then going back to the questions, Black Lives Matter Vancouver published a statement last year stating that the Vancouver organizers did not contact, consult, or include Black Lives Matter in Black Lives Matter Vancouver, despite the fact that misogyny and bleak realities of the Trump administration will disproportionately harm Black people and people of color, particularly those who are trans or queer. What did the organizers have to say about this last year? And what was their official, was there an official statement published about it?
I see. So just before the interview, we had talked and I had said that because I was not one of the organizers last year, I had to talk to the two remaining organizers with regards to this question, because, of course, I couldn't answer for myself.
Yeah.
And so they have worked hard to bridge the gap and strive for more understanding, intersectionality and inclusion. And then, as you can see by our speaker lineup this year, we have a diverse group that has been part of our transformation in the grassroots group of March on Vancouver.
Is anybody from Black Lives Matter incorporated in that list this year?
We have been we have been in connection with them, but nothing has been confirmed yet.
Okay.
But they have been, we had reached out to them, I believe, late last year.
Okay.
Pretty much, we had been in connection with them during the preparation of the Me Too rally. So that was November 4th, so before the Me Too rally in November of last year. We had reached out to them, I believe, twice in regards to whether or not they had wanted to speak at the Me Too rally.
Yeah.
And, yes, and then so from what we can see on this, on the Facebook Messenger page, that they're currently on hiatus.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then can you highlight some of the other main critiques from last year's Women's March event?
Highlight the critique of last year?
Yeah, or some of the main ones. Like, I know Black Lives Matter was a big critique, and there was some critiques of, like, lack of intersectionality and or queer trans people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, again, that was the question that I had to go run through them because I was not one of the organizers. They did listen to Black Lives Matter in a joint discussion with the remaining two organizers after the Women's March last year. And I know that they have made every effort to contact Black Lives Matter and ensure there's space for them to be part of the march and for preparation, just as I said, preparation for the Me Too rally. We had made sure that there was, you know, space for them to be part of it, and then also for this upcoming Women's March on January 20th.
And then were there any retrospective corrective actions on those critiques, specifically around trans and queer folks?
Mm-hmm. So the discussion and the continued growth in the organizing has been a positive step in making sure mistakes like that aren't made again. And, you know, personally, one of my favorite quotes from Dr. Maya Angelou is, do the best you can until you know better. Mm-hmm. Then once you know better, do better.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Are things changing or have things already changed for this year's March On event?
What do you mean, are things changing?
As in,
like, with regards to last year?
Yes.
Yes. So the organizing and the lineup and the outreach, that's all, you know, grown and changed. And we are hoping that you will join us for what should be a positive event and solidarity. I personally would love folks to leave the Next Step March feeling very encouraged.
From your perspective as a speaker last year, did you have similar critiques or did you have a different experience?
I had a positive experience when I was, you know, working with the organizers and helping me, you know, get my bio and my photo up for, you know, in preparation for the march. But, you know, everything flew by so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
just because they were organizing it under such a time crunch that even when I think about it right now, it's such a whirlwind.
Yeah.
You know, from the time that I had decided that, yes, I was going to do this, to me sending off my bio and figuring out what I was going to say and then actually being there. And then on the day of, it was just, it flew by so quickly. But yeah, no, it was a positive experience. It was very empowering for me, being, you know, a sexual abuse and trafficking survivor, standing on, you know, that stage, looking out into a sea of, what, 15,000 people. I couldn't even see the end
wow.
of the crowd. And for them to, for me to share, you know, how I survived sexual abuse and trafficking through my rap poetry, I felt it was very powerful. There were, you know, obviously, when you put yourself out there, you make yourself an easy target to unkind remarks. But I will share that after the march, there was this very young girl that was there with her mother, and she had come up and approached me and said, "My mom thinks you're a really strong lady." So I thought that was really Aww. Sweet. Yeah, I thought that was really sweet. And I think for me, it just proves that it's not survival of the fittest, but of the kindest
yeah.
that in the end will prevail. So yeah, so I had... you know, the organizers were really welcoming, and I learned a lot in such a short period of time. And yeah, when it came to, I was seeing a lot of events happening with regards to the Me Too movement. I saw a couple of marches and rallies happening up in the States, and then I had, you know, wondered if there was going to be one here in Vancouver. So I reached out to one of the remaining organizers who is now in March on Vancouver, and I had asked if there's going to be a Me Too rally set in place. And then that initial conversation between her and I sparked the idea of, like, putting on the Me Too rally November 4th. So that's how I sort of... that's how I came back into that group, but not a speaker this time, as an organizer.
Okay, so that's kind of how your yeah. like transition from a speaker to an organizer went.
Yeah. You know, it was one of those things of, like, I was looking around to see, is anyone going to set up a Me Too rally? And I'm, like, looking, and I gave it a day. And I think, I'm like, okay, I think I should do something about this.
It's my job now.
Yeah, exactly. So I embraced that call to action, and, you know, I just knew that, you know, because of the personal life experience that I had, that, you know, I knew that it was really important. I personally wanted to take the Me Too hashtag out of the realm of Facebook.
Yeah.
And onto the street. Because, you know, online activism, like, you know,
yeah.
liking and sharing and having, you know, really long Facebook discussions can only go so far.
They're not always as effective as they could be.
Exactly. And so you actually have to, so I'm a big believer, you know, in working collectively and, you know, making sure that it's a discussion mm-hmm. that continues to grow,
yeah.
right? And just like with any, you know, any issue out there that harms society, it has to be an ongoing, continuous discussion.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of our speakers from the Me Too rally that are going to be speaking at the January 20th march. And so... I'm just really happy to hear that they are going to be totally on board with speaking again. So we are really grateful for them.
Yeah, that's nice. And then, so for this year's planning, how much Indigenous involvement was considered?
Well, quite a lot. We have Daughters of the Drum leading the march along with other drummers. Daughters of the Drum is a collective of Aboriginal women who drum, sing, and perform with their intention is of celebrating and preserving Aboriginal culture. Mm-hmm. Also, Butterflies in Spirit will be performing at the march as well. And then Indigenous organizers were part of the organizing committee.
And then what about for trans, queer, and Two-Spirit folks? How much consultation was considered with them? For the full interview, check out the CITR blog.
Be some people's first encounter with, like, the Aboriginal culture. Like, a little while ago, I met a man, and I was the first Indigenous person he ever met.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's probably just like, oh, I'm wondering what you people are like. I'm not here to make people feel guilty. That's not my purpose. And I'm not here to, like, make white people hate themselves or to hate their ancestors. I'm just here to make the most beautiful art I can. I want to, like, be a gift to everyone.
You are. You are.
Here's the trick. Girl is dear, but she knows just what to do. Make him feel again. Climb him like a statue. Tell her she can come when he is close to the edge. Open, let it in, and work it out like he's some hedge. How to sleep, how to lie, to make some kind of bread. Waking up beside. With her, it's not hard to act when the John is eager, and they always come with a good story or two, thinking they could talk. He always gets so confused.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
The new Emily Carr University campus is hosting its first exhibition of 2018 on January 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. called Leaning Out of Windows, Step 1. The exhibition combines artworks made through artist-scientist collaborations and will include a panel discussion called The Translation Hub on January 27th from 2 to 5. The exhibition is up from January 26th to February 8th.
You just heard Agwaje/Away From by Mish Kota. Now we have a recording of Musqueam activist Rhiannon Bennett's speech from the Saturday's march. We wanted to share this clip because of how important it is to highlight Indigenous women and Indigenous women's voices in these events and from these events, especially considering some of the critiques we'll be talking about a little later in the show. Here is what Rhiannon had to say to the crowd.
My dear friends and relatives, it gives me really good feelings to see all of you here today. My auntie here has provided such a beautiful welcoming to open up this important march. I just would like to acknowledge that our cousins from Squamish were not able to be with us today, but I wanted to make sure that their name was brought forward and that each of you remember that this is our shared territory. It's really important that we acknowledge those shared territories and we really acknowledge the land that we're standing on. And it's not enough to simply cut and paste from one event to another event and to tick a box that you've acknowledged the territory. It's really important that it's more meaningful than that. We need to really do some decolonization on these stolen lands. Like my auntie said about how we need to go forward, that we're not going anywhere. You all aren't going anywhere, so it's important that we find a way to go forward, and we need to decolonize these lands. Every equity issue that brought you here today disproportionately impacts the Indigenous people of these lands. Every single issue. Those residential schools may now be closed, but there are more children in government care now than the height of those residential systems. Shame. 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 Our women go missing disproportionately. I could go on and on, but just stop and think. Every time you see a social justice equity issue, just know without saying that it disproportionately affects the Indigenous people of these lands. Thank you. I also wanted, when I introduced myself, that my name is Rhiannon Bennett. I'm from Musqueam, and my pronouns are she, her, and hers. They are not my preferred pronouns. Those are my pronouns. And I just really want to make sure that we are starting to include that language when we're out there and talking, and that we are creating inclusive spaces for all people, for all women, there's nothing preferred about people's pronouns. People's pronouns are their pronouns. It's amazing to see how many of you are here today. It's a little bit less than there was last year. But who, show of hands, just get a little exercise, warm up a little bit. Who was here last year? Nice. So those of you who were here last year may have been able to hear me speak, may have been able to hear my words. But I put it forward out there that there's a lot of privileged people standing before me today. And I ask people to use that privilege to lift up people that were below them. Have you used your privilege to help? In this day and age, it is simply not good enough not to be a racist, not to be homophobic, not to be transphobic. It is not good enough just to not be. You need to be actively doing things to dismantle these systems of oppression. The oppression that we deal with today is deliberate and intentional. So they need to be deliberately and intentionally dismantled. Colonization, imperialism, capitalism, misogyny, patriarchy, white supremacy, these are all things that are ingrained in Canadian culture. And if you identify, if you are a white, cisgendered, Christian Canadian, and being called a white, Canadian, Christian, cisgendered person makes you uncomfortable, I'm really not sorry. You're going to need to work on that. If being called a white person makes you feel uncomfortable, again, I'm not sorry. You need to work on that. The reason it makes you feel uncomfortable is because you are not accustomed to being racialized. And for those BIPOC people of us in the crowd, give us a wave. Where are my BIPOC people? Come on, that's a little louder. I know you guys can make some noise. We get racialized every step we walk in this world. Every step we are racialized. The color of our skin is judged, and colorism takes a really twisted effect in Indigenous issues. Because not only are we judged by how dark we are, but we're also judged at how white we are and how pale we are. And it's really messed up.
Sure is.
So we need to really work on that. Because this is what local Indigenous women look like. So again, it just really gives me good feelings to see all of you here today to work on making this a more equitable world. And let's ditch the word equality and let's talk about equity. Yeah. Equality means all of you get a pair of shoes. Equity means all of you get a pair of shoes that fit you. So let's make sure we're talking about equity and fairness, not equality and sameness. So please, again, my call out to each of you with privilege is to use your privilege to lift up those behind you. Yeah. Osea.
You just heard Rhiannon Bennett with her lovely speech. There is going to be some explicit language in this part of the show, so please be aware if you're listening and have sensitive ears. I might recommend turning it off, but it is important to talk about these kinds of things. So, Melissa, what was the March on event, or what was previously known as the Women's March, like for you last year?
Yeah, so I had some... I have more mixed feelings about it now than I did at the time, but at the time, mm-hmm. I think everyone was kind of caught up in the response and the reactions to the Trump presidency, which was some pretty dark weeks after that came out that he won. And so I think that for that reason, I was like really excited to be there. I felt like there was something really important to resist. And there were also a lot of problems around the Women's March. And I think those same feelings of just... being impacted by the Trump election and how that was really just like this intense continuation of systems of oppression and, violence that have been going on for a long time. It continued to go on. You kind of get wrapped up in that like feeling of wanting to march and wanting to protest. But yeah, there were a lot of issues. I know we're going to hash it out now about the exclusion of Black Lives Matter, the exclusion of trans women and sex workers in the organizing of the event. And yeah. Actually being there was an interesting experience, though, because the organizing had fallen short on that front and really made some mistakes. I mean, it was tough because I felt like at the same time in the crowd, there was a lot of I saw Black Lives Matter signs and I saw trans rights signs. But then there's also a lot of like white feminists that were doing the opposite. And so it's a complicated, it's a mixed bag, mixed feelings. What did you think, Ben? You were there,
yeah,
too.
I second that. There was a lot of anger. Mm-hmm. But again, in a way misplaced, and that happens, I think, especially when you mention white feminists or people that aren't used to feeling this kind of unsettling discomfort, and so it can manifest in very typical mm-hmm. ways. So
like defensiveness.
I did see that a lot.
So wait, Ben, when you say anger, do you mean like it was anger towards someone or anger towards the Trump presidency?
Trump presidency and the implications that it might have on them, which mm-hmm. is something that I don't mm-hmm. think people always thought of. Until it happened. Yeah. And so there was that kind of confusion. I remember, though, from last year, when it comes to, like, kind of visibility and photography there, yeah. It seemed for a lot of people more maybe like a photo op, or at least mm-hmm. also kind of some of the journalists there. And so that is one way of saying that, of showing like the numbers of how popular and how big of a movement it was,
right.
but also can be questioned and critiqued as well about what it actually is being photographed and the purposes, and especially
emotives.
As we heard
yeah.
with audio, some of the most inspiring and important things were said, and those can't always be taken by on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did either of you bring signs or anything last year?
Yeah. So I actually really hate the sign that I brought last year now.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But I think it's also like I've learned from it. It was a mistake. So this is actually, I brought a sign that said Pussy Grabs Back, which since that time, like, and that actually became like a pretty common slogan that's in reference to Trump and the videos that came out where he was explicitly saying that he had sexually assaulted someone, essentially. And so the idea was that, you know, pussy grabs back. But since then, I've really, like, thought about that. And it's actually been the last few weeks that I've become, like, extremely uncomfortable with that slogan, because it's really, like, a bio-essentialist feminist kind of idea that now we're saying pussy grabs back and framing pussy as being women and that women are responding. And then the idea is that women have to have a pussy to be a woman, which isn't the case at all. Yeah. And that's actually, like, that slogan and the idea of the pussy hats as well that were being worn, that is such a trans exclusionary thing and makes it, like, a really harmful and violent space, like, for trans women. Like, it's yeah, it makes me really frustrated that I had that sign and I didn't think critically about that at the time. And that I could have had, like, that it likely did have an impact on people. Like, it's really denying other people's identities. And I can't call myself a feminist and a good feminist while at the same time, like, using rhetoric and signage that's excluding other women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you used it as a learning opportunity, and now you're aware of the implications of it. So, like, that's the biggest thing that I would say people probably had to learn from last year. Yeah. And what we listened from Jody's interview is that they really tried to work on it.
Yeah.
And I'll be talking about my experience a little bit later, but did you bring anything, Ben?
I did the night before some friends and I kind of went to sign overdrive, so there were a good few, but the one I was happiest with was, so for you, for those, you will eventually find out through this, through Indigenous Airways, that I'm a language nerd. And so for my sign, it was the word together in a various amount of languages. And then under, it was better, so better together. Because for me, at least going there, one of the biggest issues I can see is when it comes to immigration and acceptance in that sense.
Yeah.
And so I chose not to have English there. I had French because that is a national language of Canada. Mm-hmm. But there are Indigenous languages. There were minority languages. There were languages from various language families. So I wanted to show and represent really that, especially in Vancouver, that has such a great amount of diversity, that it really is better to be, you know, together.
And did anybody comment on either of your signs?
I got a few comments from people that could understand what they were saying. There's one that was kind of confused why there was no English or any language they could understand, but then I pointed out, like, ensemble in French, and, like, oh, yeah. But overall, like, for people that I think could read it, they were happy with it.
Yeah.
But I guess there was a lot of text. I think people got kind of bored reading.
Okay, yeah. Honest.
Right. I actually did. I was actually interviewed by, I think it was, like, Global News or something, because they saw the sign and they were like, oh, that's great. And they wanted to interview me. So there's, like, a clip floating around somewhere where I'm like, Canada has colonialism and xenophobia, too. And anyway, but I also, like, have bitter feelings about it because it sort of gave the sign even more airtime that, again, like I said, my feelings about it now have changed a lot. So. Mm-hmm.
So in terms of this year, I did decide to go. I went with another Unseated Airwaves volunteer, Madison. We went and I made myself a sign that says no white feminism on stolen land. My experience this year, like, in regards to my sign, I would say I definitely got some dirty looks and some confusion and some people not really understanding what that meant. But that's okay. And of course, like, it was hard because I think it's a really powerful sign and it has a lot to say. But there were some white feminists who were not very pleased about what it had to say. But, like, what my main intention with that sign was to say, like, consider the land that you're on and consider who you're considering in your feminism, and whose voices you're overshining by, like, wearing your pink pussy hats or things like that. For those of you who don't know, white feminism is a form of feminism that excludes BIPOC or biracial and Indigenous people of color, anything like that, and centers white problems and white feminism, which is totally valid, but it's just not valid to exclude other people who face other types of oppressions. Yeah, and then I would say, like, some highlights from this year are Black Lives Matter did end up going. If you were listening earlier, you heard the interview with Jody Ortega and how she was saying that Black Lives Matter was on a little hiatus, and they hadn't responded to the organizers' emails, but they were there and they made an inspiring speech, and they talked about Horgan's Alley, which is super Hogan's Alley, John Horgan, and they talked about like super important topics like that. And then also, Jody, you mentioned that Butterflies in Spirit danced, and they were beautiful. They performed with JB, the First Lady, an elder. Yeah, it was lovely. And then an elder opened the ceremony, which is super important. They also led the actual march. They included trans women this year. It was also sex-positive feminism. And sex-positive feminism definitely has its own critiques, but I think it's still important to talk about, because the way they did it was through a sex worker. And she spoke about all of the ways that we can be allies to sex workers and not exist in a sex-negative or sex-worker-negative space, which is really important considering, like, everything that was happening, especially last year around the Trump presidency and things like that. Like, she mentioned that people were saying that Trump should just hire a prostitute. And she was saying that, like, whatever boundaries he's going over with you, he's going to do the exact same thing with a sex worker. So you're still, you're just pushing that abuse to the side to some, to another marginalized community that people don't like.
And that experience the brunt of the violence, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the pro. And I think that that's where, I don't know, my critiques of myself with that sign, that trans exclusionary sign, that I've thought the most about is, like, kind of putting into conversation with these issues. Like, I was reading, this is one of my favorite articles that came out recently about the march. Filipina feminist activist, she's the new editorial director of Bitch Media. Her name's Lisa Factora Borges. And so she said, the Women's March is not only a bold chapter in the continuing narrative of U.S. feminisms, it has also accurately documented the problems still unresolved in feminist movements, namely white supremacy, bioessentialism, and ableism. It can't be overstated. We need to center the people who couldn't be there either by exclusion or by inability. This means disenfranchised communities, incarcerated women, single mothers with multiple jobs, U.S. residents not yet made legal citizens, the chronically ill, folks with disability, immigrants, and exploited laborers. This also means ruminating the lines drawn by biases and rhetoric preventing the full participation of trans women, sex workers, and Indigenous women. So yeah, I think when you think about that, like, those are the communities that experience the most violence. And while Lisa was kind of talking from an American perspective, those points are so relevant in Canada as well. It's important because it's not cis white women that experience the brunt of patriarchal oppression.
Yeah,
it's like, or the most intense kind of impacts of the violence that's wrought by patriarchy. It's Indigenous women, trans women, women of color, women impacted by disabilities, which I think is basically what Rhiannon Bennett was getting at with her speech as well. And I think it's so important for us to remember, like, patriarchy functions in tandem with systems of racism and settler colonialism, ableism, transphobia. And if we don't resist all of those structural issues at the same time, then our resistance isn't only exclusionary and elitist, but it's fundamentally compromised.
Yeah.
So
definitely. And I would say, like, a critique for myself with even the Jody interview is I didn't include narratives that had less able bodies than mine. Like, I feel like ableism is super important to talk about because it's something that lots of people inherently do and they don't notice that they're doing it. And, like, I even did that. I have a body that's very able, and knowing that other people don't have bodies like that, it's something that I often forget. And I think that people still do that. Like, I did find this year they did mention people who were disabled, and they mentioned that people who couldn't be there can stream it online, but they didn't talk about that previously. And I think that that's a really big problem, because if you don't talk about something that's that important previously, and another way that people can show support and solidarity despite not being there, like, what about a mother who just gave birth, or what about somebody who can't walk or can't stand for that long, and they didn't include chairs at all for anybody who was there. And, like, I have back problems and I couldn't stand, like, I had to leave early. My back hurt too bad, but I would still probably not take a chair if there were other people who needed the chairs. And, like, elders, I saw them, they had to bring their own little rolly chairs. And there's something wrong with that.
Yeah.
And then also on the, like, downside this year, people still wore the pink pussy hats.
Yeah.
And there are problems with that Melissa kind of talked about. But, like, they're very trans exclusionary. And then it also, the color itself is exclusion. It excludes people who aren't white.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, not the color of people who...
Not everyone has a pink pussy.
Yeah, not everybody has genitals like, that are that color.
Yeah.
And, like, even white people say that, like, they don't have genitals that are that color. But, it's like, imagine what it feels like to grow up knowing that your body... Or thinking that your body is ugly because it's not a light pink color. And that's the reality that people who aren't white have to face all the time.
Yeah.
And, and then also on that note, it also the crowd this year also included lots of white feminists, hence the dirty looks for my no white feminism on stolen land sign. And I know that when you're going to an event like this, the organizers can't control the attendees, but it just makes it hard for me, someone who isn't white and also faces other sorts of discrimination in terms of queerness and two-spiritedness, to want to go to a place that has so many people who aren't willing to consider intersectionality or aren't willing to mention its importance.
Yeah.
It's just, it kind of sucks. And I know people personally who didn't go because they didn't want to be in an area surrounded by white feminists. But, like, what can you do?
Yeah, and that's the frustrating part about it is, like, I feel like you get this sort of resistance when these types of critiques are brought up with people. And I've definitely seen this in some feminist circles, like, that people are just like, oh, well, that's just too much or something, or that's just too much, like we can't be, you know, but we have to be keyed into all of these issues, because if you're not keyed into all of these issues, then you're actually, you're not only just putting forward your cause, but you're putting someone else's, like, behind, and we're not, like, your sign better together. That's the whole idea of, like, if we can be intersectional and be inclusive with the way we do our feminism, then we might actually get somewhere with all of this patriarchy and colonialism, right?
Yeah.
It also is a question of why is it too much, and is it too much for you, maybe, or is because, like, for some people, it's not too much, it's all they are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It just, again, the issue of centering who does it go to.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we are out of time for this. But now we have our unseated events. Here we highlight Indigenous relevant events that you might be interested in attending. So the first one is, do you know how to pronounce that, Ben?
Where is it? I have a hunch. Me look.
Stories of the Downtown East Side. That's okay. I probably would have not pronounced it like that.
I need to know the orthography. It might be.
A portrait of five Vancouverites living on society's fringes during the 2010 Winter Olympics, Lukalukal, digs into uncharted territory, falling somewhere between a fiction we need to see and a documentary we wish didn't have to exist. Don't miss the chances to see stories of the Downtown East Side told from within at SFU Woodwards, 149 West Hastings Street, on January 25th from 7 to 10 p.m. Do you want to read the second one, Melissa?
Sure. And then there's Lawrence Paul Yuchwalupton's new works. Lawrence Paul is an advocate for contemporary Indigenous issues in Canada. Especially relevant to his practice are the elements of Coast Salish cosmology, Northwest Coast design, and the Western landscape tradition. So following his recent solo exhibition at Canada House, London, UK, this exhibition will share new paintings and works on paper developed by the artist. The event will be at Macaulay and Cofine Art, 293 East 2nd Avenue, on February 3rd from 2 to 4 p.m.
And last but certainly not least, there is Hupi 2018 Meeks edition. This event will be celebrating the Nishka New Year by sharing their culture through song, dance, and stories. It will be on February 2nd and 3rd at the Peony Forum, 2901 East Hastings.
Yeah, and I also wanted to put one last shout out for the First Nations Students Association Journal. We are still accepting submissions. You can send those forgot the email, but if you look on the Facebook page, you can get that. It's basically, there's, I think it's two more days left or a few more days left.
It ends...
The 31st. Sorry. More than 2 days.
We have a week.
The 31st. So anything, it could be papers, original artwork, literature, short stories, anything that has to do with Indigenous or decolonizing issues, send that out to us and get your submissions in, because it's going to be a great journal.
Yes. And I know we're looking even... It really can be a wide array of work. We're especially looking for creative pieces as well right now.
Yeah.
Creative written pieces or
creative
art?
It could be art, like, so more like poems, something that could be in a journal. Like, it can't be like a, I don't know, 4x4 foot painting, because that doesn't really fit in a journal. But anything that you think can fit into, like, that kind of format. So mostly like poetry or creative writing. could be some art as well.
Yes. Yeah, so if you have questions, send us an email.
So thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Jody Ortega for speaking with us about the March on Vancouver event. Thank you to the Gender Empowerment Collective for collecting the recordings and speeches for us. We would like to thank our sponsors, NORAD Electric and Decolonizing Water. The next show that you'll hear is Cue It Up. And my name is Autumn Schnell, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM.